And without further delay, I'd like to introduce our speaker for the evening, Sarah R.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups, and I'm really excited to be here. I already feel better. It's such a great meeting. It's so warm and welcoming. I loved the birthdays. I think it's funny that on the flyer it says Rock On. Is that the name of your men's group? I think it should be Blowtorch Men's Group. Like, that blowtorch is what I'm going to remember you for. I loved it. I thought it was so cool, and I'm hopefully going to get through my talk like that. Blowtorch. Anyways, I am a member of Al-Anon, and what that means is I apply the Al-Anon 12 steps in my life, and I really do believe it's a way of life. I think it was one of the birthday people, Diego, is that your name? He said he can't wait to come home, and that just resonated with me. I feel that way every time I come to a meeting, and I've never even been to this meeting, and I feel home here. So if you're new, welcome, and if you're not so new, welcome too. It's a good place to be. It's like what home is supposed to be, safe. You know, my home wasn't really safe, but this kind of home is. And anyways, I want to thank David for asking me. David and I have been friends for a long time, and it's just, I mean, it's one thing to be asked to speak at an Al-Anon meeting and share your story. That's like terrifying. It was hard enough living it, and then to have to come and share about it. But when someone who knows you asks you, it's an extra special honor. And it's my privilege to be your friend. And I do know people from this meeting, and Willie remembers me and Alateen and my brother and my sisters, and that's extra special. And I want to tell you that the reason why I know people in this meeting when I live all the way in Orange County is because of service. And I learned that the best way to grow, and like, I'm all about the fast route, like what's the most efficient way to get there. And I'm going to tell you the most efficient way to get better is to get involved with service. That's the shortcut. That's the secret. That's the fastest way to get into recovery. And I'm so grateful because my world has gotten bigger since I came here. Anyways, I have to tell you that I am not an expert. I am not an ambassador of Al-Anon, thank goodness, or the president. I am just another member trying to apply these principles. My life has been affected by alcoholism. I'm grateful today to know the why, but I come here for the, you know, what now. And I do find a way of living here, and I'm so grateful for that. But I love to say, if you can't be a good example, be a loud warning. So that also gives me permission to say yes and come and be honest with you, and I'm going to try to do that today. Before I forget, I have to mention my friend Linda. She came on a moment's notice to come and support me, and she basically was willing to get in the car because she didn't want me to have to go come here alone. We don't do things alone anymore. And I'm just so grateful. We had a meeting in the car, and it's just so nice to feel loved and accepted and supported. And so I want to say thank you for making the trek all the way from Laguna Beach. She came. So thank you for coming with me. Anyways, I grew up in a family that was affected by alcoholism. My dad is a drinker, my mom is a crier, and I'm the screamer. I am the oldest of five, and what that meant to me was it was my job to fill in the gaps where my parents left off, and there were a lot of gaps. I was very arrogant, smug, self-righteous, and dominating from the beginning. I can remember being 5 years old and looking at my mother and thinking I would be a better mother. And that's not normal. at five. But anyways, I didn't have a lot of respect for my parents. My dad mostly because of his drinking, but really it wasn't so much the drinking in the beginning. It was more that he couldn't hold the job. We were constantly moving. We were always having to uproot and go to a new place, a new state often. All of us were born in different states, and we just never had any stability. I was always craving roots, and I just felt so frustrated and angry with my dad for not giving us that stability. And my mom, I didn't really respect her because she never stood up to my dad. She never protected us. She never did what I thought she should be doing, you know, and she was always crying in the corner, rocking one of the babies or nursing or whatever. And I was just like, you know, let's get this done. And I just remember being completely enraged, just frustrated, angry, beyond belief. To say my dad's drinking bothered me feels like a huge understatement. It infuriated me. Anger was like my primary emotion. My dad is also involved in the church, and for some years he was called pastor, and what that did for me is it just made me angrier because he was fooling all of the masses, and I knew the truth. And I felt like the only one who knew the truth, like everyone was believing this lie. And what is it about my dad that can fool everybody? And I just felt so angry. I felt gypped. I felt like, why am I, if only I was born in a different family, if I had a different family with the same personality, the same looks, the same everything, because there's nothing wrong with me, I'll be okay. And I would just, you know, kind of stew over it. I look back and I always say that anger was like the vitamin I took. Like I just would, you know, think about all I was angry about. It was like my energy for the day. It would get me all fired up. And I just felt so, all the time. My dad is very charismatic. Today I realize and acknowledge and accept that I'm a lot like my dad. But he could, you know, move the room. And there were times that I remember feeling like, oh, I want to buy it. You know, like I want to be proud of him. I want to be daddy's girl. I was never daddy's girl. But I remember having that mix of feeling, you know, hating him, resenting him, and then at the same time craving his approval and wanting to be proud of him. And just that conflict always going. But I felt like my mom wasn't standing up to him, so that was my job. So I got in his face all the time. It wasn't until I got into Alateen that I found out it's really dangerous to get in the face of somebody who's been drinking. I'm very grateful. My dad actually never hit me. I wanted him to hit me. He hit all the walls, the TVs, you know, everything's broken in the house. And but he never hit me, and believe me, I really wanted him to. I taught my younger sister how to dial 911. The police were at our house all the time. I was begging to be taken away. I did not know if I could have gone onto the rooftop and screamed, "There's something wrong in this house," I would have. I know a lot of you suffer from family secrets, whatever those are. I was the person telling all the family secrets. Anybody who wanted to hear, I was, you know, telling everybody everything because something was just so wrong. This is so messed up. And my family was just like, keep it down, you know, stop. And my mom used to say, you see everything black, no matter what is happening, you make it worse. You blow it up. Wow. You blow it up and you make it worse. That quality, I have to jump ahead and share. I've worked a fourth and fifth step, which is magic. And I highly recommend it. But one of the things I learned in working a fourth step is that character trait of, I don't even know what you call it, blowing it up, also works for good. And today, I use that character trait. It's no longer a defect. Well, it can still be a defect, but for the most part, I know how to channel it as an asset. And you give me one good thing, I know how to blow it up with gratitude, and it carries me. So while I used to, you know, use it to blow up other things, that's why I like the blowtorch. I just realized I made the connection. Anyway, I loved it. Today, I blow up the good. So anyways, in that home, I had no tools. I was angry. My brothers and sisters will now tell you they were more afraid of me than they ever were of Dad. I was pushing them under the bed saying he's going to kill us. I was making everything so dramatic. And I was dying on the inside. On the outside, I am, you know, straight A student, class president. I sit in the front row. All the teachers love me. I am the good girl. And I find my identity in rule following. I am. On the outside, everything's all together. And that's the way my dad is. My dad is great about the facade. We all know how to put it together. There were times that we were homeless and we had lost everything. And I taught my little sisters, we used to write down everything that we wore every day so that people wouldn't know we were poor. In fact, my one sister got best dressed in high school, and she was homeless in a shelter living at the time. So, I mean, we were really good at outward appearances. And I share that with you because I can still be good at that. And I come in here and I tell you that there are people that know me, that know my insides, they see me at my ugliest, they know that the more makeup I have on, the more insecure I am. And that the outside is not a reflection of what's really going on inside. And I'm grateful that people talk to my heart and my soul, and they don't buy the crap I put on Facebook. You know? So, such a great person on Facebook. But anyways, So what happened is we're moving. We're constantly moving. This one time we were living in the KOA campground. We moved every week. That's how they kept the homeless people out. And I remember this one particular experience. My dad had left in the morning, and his habit was to go look for a job because he was, you know, never could hold down a job. And he would go look for a job and try to get some food for the family. And my mom is here with five kids, and we're at this, we haven't eaten all day. And I remember there was another family, and they were like really camping. And they were having their dinner, and it was their family vacation. And like, I remember the mother looking at me and like realizing like we were hungry and homeless, and she scooted all her kids into the tent and like looked at me with such pity, and something rose up in me. It was like something developed that day, this survival of don't you pity me, and I will not be looked down upon. And this pride and arrogance became like my outside armor, and that became my shield. It's still my go-to. You know, my overly confident, I can handle the world, I need no one, I don't need you, get out of my way, I'm gonna trample you. You know, that kind of anger and bitterness and, you know, on my own strength, I will kill this disease. And I always felt like that. I always felt just powerful. And unfortunately, lack of power is my dilemma. When we moved to California, I was 11 years old. We brought one suitcase, and we moved in with my grandmother, and she was very bitter and affected by alcoholism. There's alcoholism all through my family. And I just remember I needed someone to hate. I just needed an excuse, and it became my dad. And so everything got channeled into my dad. My mom is kind of the codependent. It's not safe to be angry at her. And so my dad was the one who got everything. And it was just get away from him. And so when my mom sat us down and she said, you know, I think your dad's an alcoholic, it was literally like one more name to call him. I had no idea about the disease of alcoholism. I didn't understand that it's something that people don't choose to have. My dad, even though he liked to drink and that was his way of entering the world, in functioning or whatever, he never sought out to destroy my life or my brother and my sisters or my mom, you know, or his own. That was never his intention. And it took me a long time to recognize that we all suffered. We all were affected by alcoholism just differently. It looks different on everybody. But anyway, I ended up going to my first ALA team meeting. I was 14 years old. It was April 30th, 1987, and I do celebrate that as my birthday because I've been continuously going to meetings ever since. It was like a spaceship landed and all my people got off, and you guys are my people, and I found something here, and I have never felt it necessary to leave either. I think another one of the birthday people said that. Happy birthday to everyone, by the way. That was really, really beautiful to listen to. It's super inspiring. Anyway, I know some people struggle with whether or not meetings are for them, and I feel I'm sorry for you, because I always knew I was looking for this place, this safe haven, this place where people were talking real and honest and saying things that were happening in my home and in my heart that no one else was talking about. I craved the vulnerability and transparency that you offered. So when I came into ALA Teen, I was 14. I was dressed in all pastels because I look pure, you know, and sweet and straight A student. And even though I felt like there was this black oozing monster living inside of me. And the first thing that happened was there was a guy who I'm still friends with to this day. And he was wearing a big black leather jacket. He was missing his front tooth, which is so scary. He had a mohawk that was dyed white, earrings up the ear. And he leaned back in his metal chair dangerously low, you know, almost. And he said hi to me. And I got chills all over. He looked as bad as I felt. I was like, this is my place. These are my people. And, you know, he asked me if I wanted the smoking or the non-smoking side of the room, which is like asking somebody, do you want the peeing or the non-peeing side of the pool, right? Crazy. So the whole place is like filled with smoke, and I'm this good Christian girl in all pastels, and there's cussing, craziness, and oh, it was the best. I was so happy. And slowly after that, I started bringing my brothers and sisters. At one time, there was 4 out of 5 of us going to Alateen, which is kind of amazing. But shortly after I got into that meeting, I learned you can't make an alcoholic stop drinking. It's like trying to tell somebody with pneumonia to stop coughing. And in my mind, if my dad never stops drinking, he'll never be able to keep a job, which means we'll never be able to stay in the same house. I'll never be able to stay in the same school. I won't be able to keep my friends. I'll never have roots. Like, my life is going to be a disaster. Like, I have to get out of here. And I didn't, like, run it by a sponsor or even share it in the meeting. I remember in the beginning, I was so terrified to talk in the meetings because it's like, this is so great. I don't want to ruin it. You know, I just was like, oh, I just thought it was amazing. I still feel that way, actually. I really love the program so much, but I am willing to talk now, obviously. But anyway, I just felt like I had to get away from the alcoholic. That had to be the solution, get as far away from the alcoholic as possible. I didn't know that at 14 years old, I was already completely infused and steeped in alcoholism. You do not have to drink to suffer from alcoholism. But I left home at 15, and now it's crazy because I look at pictures, and I mean, I was a baby, but I felt so invincible. I was so naive and so angry. I think my anger translated into power, and I felt like my anger was going to make me survive, and it didn't. It put me in bad situations with bad people at bad times, and the world was really harsh with me, but I was very fortunate. I've always had angels in my life. I've always had people that loved me. If love was a cure, I would not be here. I have always known that I was loved. I knew my dad loved me, my mom loved me, my brothers and sisters, my teachers loved me. But that wasn't it. Like, I've never felt protected, safe, or cared for until I came here. But I always knew I was loved. So what I was getting at is I had teachers who helped me get a scholarship. So I went to this very small private school on academic scholarship, and I cleaned the boys' and the girls' restroom, and I rented a room. Actually, I moved around a little bit, but I ended up renting a room from a Cuban family. They were a wonderful family. They had 5 kids of their own. They had dinner every night. And I remember the father of the house, always had a glass of wine with dinner. And I just couldn't be a part of that family. They wanted me to. They would have adopted me if they could. They still call me. They love on me. They say I'm their other daughter. But I could never really embrace that family because they weren't mine, number one. And number two, that glass of wine at dinner drove me crazy. It made me mad because my dad did not drink every day. My dad is a periodic. He could go months without drinking, and then all of a sudden everything's lost again. And this man would drink every day. He still had a job. They had a house. They had a pool. Like, everything was good. I couldn't put that together in my mind. It didn't make sense. And I began to feel like alcohol was the enemy. I was the kid who didn't do drugs. I was on the, say no to drugs school committee. I was anti-drugs, anti-alcohol, all of that stuff. And honestly, like, looking back, I think if I really was an alcoholic, I would have drank at this point in my story because I was in so much pain. Like, when I think about how hollow I felt on the inside and just exhausted because I was doing life on my own and I felt so by myself, but I also had this vendetta to, like, prove something, and I needed something. But what I know today is that my drug of choice is attention. And I found that from people who use drugs and alcohol. Isn't that ironic? So even though I hate alcohol and I hate drugs, I love being around people who love alcohol and who love drugs. And I don't understand that phenomenon. And I hate myself for it. But I ended up getting into the boyfriend thing. Boyfriends became my drug of choice. I always had a boyfriend. After I left home, I had to have a boyfriend. The worse he was, the better I felt, right? And next to me, he makes me look so much better. So, and I always say that I need you is far more romantic than I love you, right? Well, that does nothing for me, but I need you? Ugh. I began to attract them, and they, anyways, you know, when one relationship was going south, I would get into another relationship because I quickly realized I couldn't be alone. I had to have a boyfriend. And so I did this whole overlapping thing, which I know some people call cheating. But I just think it's seamless. It's more efficient. And I'm all about efficiency. So anyway, I overlapped and I just always made sure that I had somebody there. And what ended up happening is I got pregnant. And for me, that was a bottom. For me, that was, I had been going to Alateen meetings. I've been kind of working the steps. I got a sponsor. I got commitments. But basically what I would do is I would do steps 1, 2, 3, get a new sponsor. 1, 2, 3, get a new sponsor. Because I don't know if you know this, but here's a trick. Every time you get a new sponsor, they're like, well, let's go start from step 1 again so we can get to know each other. Oh, okay, sure. If you need to do that, that's fine. I love step 1. Let's go back to being powerless. Great. Because I was terrified of actually doing an inventory. I'd heard about inventories, and honestly, I was operating at maximum capacity, and I did not have any room to like see my part or be criticized or see anything that I was doing wrong. Because what if it's all my fault? What if I really do have the spirit of Jezebel in me, like my father used to say? Then what, right? And I can't let anything in. So I was just, I couldn't. But anyway, hitting a bottom is basically that point where you can't go any farther. This is not working. And for me, hitting a bottom in the program meant this program is not working because I'm blaming everyone else and I haven't recognized yet that I'm my own qualifier. For me, hitting a bottom was when I realized, oh my goodness, this is no longer about my dad, my mom, my brothers and sisters, my teachers, or getting a bad break. This is about, I have started to make decisions and make choices and put myself in places that are ruining my life. This is about, I am my own qualifier. That was my bottom. So here I am pregnant. I don't know who the father is. It was a terrible, horrific situation. I am a good girl. These things don't happen. I was voted most likely to succeed, and I was pregnant a year after high school. I told you I was a 4.0 student. I left home at 15. I was supporting myself. I probably could have gone to any college I wanted to go to, and I didn't send one college application. And I share that with you because for years, I thought that I was afraid of failure. And when I did my fourth and fifth step, my sponsor shared with me, no, honey, you have a fear of success. You thrive in chaos, but you're your own worst enemy. And when things start getting good, that's when you destroy it because you don't know how to handle the good. And that was a mind-blowing revelation for me to learn. It made that whole fourth step grueling experience worth it. The things that I learned about myself in the fourth step, the patterns that I saw, broke me free. And that's why I believe in the steps. And then after you do the fourth step, there's this amazing momentum that just gets you all the way through to 12. So I encourage you to just get over that fourth step hump. But for me, it was like magic to see that. But here I am. I should have gone to college. Instead, I'm pregnant. So I was going to put the baby up for adoption. I was going to move back east, have the baby, come back, just pick up right where I left off. And I had a bunch of friends in Alateen who were like, nope, that your dad used to do geographics. You're not doing that. You're going to stay right here. You're going to show up every week. You're going to share in the meetings. We're only as sick as our secrets, and together we can make it. And they would not let me leave. And they said, we don't care what you do with the baby. We care about what you do with you. You're going to stay here. You're a part of this group. And they really saved me. And so I kept coming back, and I did what I was told, and I shared in the meetings, and I opened up, and I was, I was a mess, and I was in so much pain. And I realized no matter how hard I've been trying, I could not fight alcoholism on my own. I could not will myself to not be affected by alcoholism. I could not get out of it all by myself. And so here I was, and I didn't know who the father was, and the guys in the Alateen meeting were going to get shirts that said not the father, and they're so supportive of me. That's how we support each other in Alateen. Anyways, So at 8 months pregnant, I'm sitting at a bus stop. I'm in a Bob's Big Boy uniform. And it was hot and sweaty in Fullerton that day. And I just remember feeling so tired, like I was going to fall over, like the way I think some people, some really, really old people look, you know, when you see them walking and you're like, oh, any minute they're going to die. That's completely how I felt. Like I was 19 years old. I completely felt like at any moment I was going to fall over out of sheer exhaustion. And that's how hard I was fighting life, by myself, on my own steam. I believed God was out there, but I was just kind of sure, and I'm sure he adored me, who didn't, but it was more, I wasn't cutting it, he didn't have time for me and my shenanigans, and I just wasn't cutting it. That's how I felt. I didn't deserve his approval, I wasn't asking for his help, I just didn't feel worthy. Anyway, I just remember waiting for that bus and thinking, gosh, if I give this baby up, I'm going to go back to living the way I've been living. And I just can't. And I just kind of made this little bargain. Okay, God, I'm going to do my best to keep this child because I feel like for this baby, I will change. Like I needed someone else. That's how codependent I am. I can't change for myself, but for this innocent child, she deserved a better life. She deserved to have the cycle broken. In the interest of time, I will jump ahead and tell you that that little girl turned 22 last Monday. And I know, she lived. You're clapping because she's alive. Thank you. Thank you for believing in me. Anyways, I kept that little girl, and she looks a lot like me, which is so funny because I'm sure that I would have seen her in the world and be like, oh, you're supposed to be mine. But anyway, she saved me is what I always say. She saved me. So I had this little baby, and I was determined to live life differently. And I remember she was 6 weeks old, and I went to the Al-Anon Family Groups convention because I figured that's the best place to get a sponsor. And I was looking for somebody who was active in service, and I literally ran right into her. And the woman that I asked to be my sponsor, she was like a black belt Al-Anon. She was a go-getter. She was involved in service. She went to umpteen meetings a week. I don't know. Somebody here said they went to 9 meetings a week. I don't know. Will you be my sponsor? That's how, I mean, I was like, the number of meetings you went to meant how much recovery you had. Today, I don't believe that. But whatever. I was, at the time, I thought that. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, she's like Al-Anon, real, and she's going to kick my butt. And I had gotten to a place where I went from one side of the pendulum of all controlling to another side of the controlling, other side of the pendulum saying, somebody please control me. And that's just as sick. But I really was desperate. And I had this little 6-week-old baby, and I wanted to live life differently for her. So I fell into a really strong home group, which there's nothing against that. I was looking for the structure. I started going to meetings every day. I started reading the daily readers. I began to work the steps. My life started to change. I started to get better from the inside out instead of from the outside in. Shortly after being in that in my home group, I met a sober alcoholic, or he met me, whatever. He was not just sober, he was shining sober. He was 2 years sober. I've never known anyone in my whole life who was 2 years sober. That was crazy town. And he was just the best. And so we were engaged within 4 months. We got engaged at the coffee break of an AA meeting. It was so romantic. And he basically loved the program the way I love the program. And we bought into this way of life. We were ready to trudge the road of happy destiny. He was introduced to my daughter pretty quickly. And it was, you know, this is Daddy Jeb, this was Jeb, then Daddy Jeb, then Daddy. And he's still dad to this day. He adopted her. And he's the only dad she's ever known. And when I got married and walked down the aisle, she walked down the aisle in a little pink veil and dress, and she got, I got a sober husband and she got a sober dad, and that was the deal. And honestly, I think for me, coming from the home I came from, my dad is not sober even to this day. By the way, he is in my life and I do love him no matter what. You do not have to be sober to be in my life today. Because of Al-Anon and because of the program I work, Al-Anon is the adapter that I plug in that allows me to communicate and have relationship with people I know I normally could not on my own. But because I have a program, you don't have to change. I get to work a program and I can be around anyone. That's freedom. But anyways, It was so important for me that my little girl would have a sober dad. That was all I ever wanted as a kid, right? All I ever wanted. So to get a sober dad for my little girl was like the greatest thing ever. And it was a good life for a while there. I remember he used to take her on 12-step calls, and she would show up at her preschool and say, "I'm a winner because I'm sober." And the cute things kids say, and you know, it was like so funny. And she could always spot the newest newcomer in the room, and she'd run up and hug them. And she had a love for the program and for Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon family groups like no other. And we shared as a family, and it just felt right. You know, everything that we did was program. Everyone, everywhere we went was program. All our friends were program. And I just will tell you that the problem with that is my world got really small. And that I don't think that we're just supposed to come in here and live in a meeting. I think that we're supposed to take it out and live amongst the real world and practice these principles in all our affairs. And I will tell you, in a meeting, I shine. I know what to say. I know Alanese. You speak it too. If I tell you that I effed up majorly, you love me more. Ha! The real world, they don't do that. It doesn't work like that out there. So to practice my program out there with people who don't respect and honor the principles that I live by, that's the real gift. That's the real challenge. That's where the real freedom is. But I didn't know that for a long time. For a long time, my program was all about inside the program. It was very incestuous. But here we are trucking along, doing the life. And I realize now it was really like the opposite of step one. Somewhere I had bought into this belief. No one told me this. I came up with this on my own, as brilliant as I am, that if only I work a good enough program, alcoholism cannot get me or my little girl. If I go to enough meetings, if I read the right books, if I sponsor enough people, if I take enough commitments, alcoholism cannot get me. And that's how I live my program. It was totally fear-based. It was about not, you know, keeping the darkness back, keeping it at bay. And I became a doer and a shaker just like before on my own steam. There's no need for God if I have a program of action that I'm taking, you know? But I didn't know any of that until my husband drank. Nobody gasps. I always expect somebody to gasp, like, oh, he drank? An alcoholic drank? It was shocking to me. He was almost 9 years sober. We took vows. He was supposed to stay sober forever. I don't know what, he like broke the covenant. Anyway, he drank. And I remember a week before he drank, I smelled alcohol in our bed. You never forget that sweaty, musty alcohol smell, right? Never forget it. And I was like, and I just immediately dismissed it like it must be the dog. And it's so utterly ridiculous. I die every time I say that. My retriever Labrador never drank. She never had a drinking problem. Ever. Ever. Never showed any red flag warning signs. But yet the man I'm sleeping next to has professed to have an alcohol problem and shares about it on a daily basis. But it can't be him. You know, that's how denial is so great. And each time there's a sober period, we think the problem has gone away. And he was sober almost 9 years. So surely I thought the problem had gone away. What happened was a grenade went off and my whole program blew up and it was shattered. And you know, Eleanor Roosevelt says you can tell how strong a woman is like a tea bag when you put her in hot water. And I think that's true for Al-Anons. What happened was when I was put in hot water and active alcoholism returned into my life, my program was very shallow and it was very outward. It was like skin deep. It didn't go all the way through. And I began to wrestle with the principles of the program. And what does it mean to love an alcoholic? Is it really okay to love an alcoholic, or is it only okay to love a sober alcoholic? And I began to just kind of fall to my knees and say, what does it mean to be an Al-Anon? I thought that once he drank, it would shut off. I remember actually, it was crazy, and I wish I could tell you all of it, but it was nuts. But at one point, I remember watching him slam speed, thinking, surely this will turn it off. And what I mean by that is I wanted the love for him to be turned off. I didn't want to love him anymore, and yet I still did. I couldn't understand the obsession that I had with him. I was ashamed of myself, and I didn't understand it, and I was confused. And I was coming to meetings, and I felt like a failure. And my sponsor would say, just keep sharing. And I didn't want to share about this. I was mortified. I had worked the steps. I'd been in the program over a decade. Why is this happening now? I couldn't even wrap my head around it. And then I have this little girl who's watching my every move, and she's saying things like, you know, I love Daddy no matter what. Why couldn't I love him no matter what? You know, I remember she came to me and she said, Mommy, they're talking about Daddy at the meetings like he's a monster. He's not a monster. He's my daddy. And I was like, that's right. She's 7 years old. I get down on her level. I'm like, he loves you. You love him. He's your daddy. He'll always be your daddy. And she's like, well, why won't you let me see him? And I yelled at her, because he's drinking. And I heard myself. I might as well have called him a monster. It was crazy. Like, I was like, what does it mean to love an alcoholic? How do you do life with an alcoholic who is not working a program, who you still love, who doesn't love you back the way you want to be loved? I was lost. Anyways, I ended up having to change groups and getting a new sponsor because it just wasn't safe in my meeting anymore to love the same man. And I felt scared and frustrated. And I remember my sponsor saying to me, I called her at like 11:30 or 1:30, and I don't know, whatever, in the middle of the night, right? Because alcoholism doesn't sleep. And she was like, you have too much time to be calling me at this hour. And when she said that, I knew she was wrong. And I believe in sponsorship, but sponsors are human too. And we are all affected by alcoholism. And I don't think what she said to me was right. I don't care how much time you have in the program. If alcoholism is happening in your home, you've got the same 24 hours that Joe Blow does, who just walked into the meeting. And what am I supposed to do with this? And I needed answers, and I needed them fast. And so I began to search and look for other meetings. And I reached out to a woman. And basically, the reason why I asked her to be my sponsor is because she made me laugh. And I was in so much pain. I needed to laugh more than anything. And also, when I called her, she would go like this, Sarah! Like, she was so happy to hear from me. I'm like living in chaos, crazy madness. And she was like happy to hear from me. I try to remember that to this day when people call me. Anyway, I have to share this one story. It's my daughter's favorite story. But at that time, I was so nuts and so crazy and just nuts, smoking, cussing. You know, just wildly out of control. You would have thought I was on drugs. I was completely sober. I had lost all this weight. I was crazy. Anyway, there's a book called Potatoes Not Prozac. And I didn't actually read the book. I read the back of the book just to get the gist of it. Efficiency! Anyway, the gist of it is you eat a potato every night with nothing on it. It changes your serotonin levels, can level you out, help you out, whatever. So I bought a whole thing of potatoes, we put them in the oven. I told my daughter, this is like in recovery. I told my daughter, Mommy's not gonna cry anymore. I'm gonna eat these potatoes, everything's gonna be okay. I'm so embarrassed that I'm telling you this, but it is my daughter's favorite story. So I promise her I will tell it. Anyway, so we're eating the potatoes every night. After a couple days, she got sick of them. I kept doing it diligently, and I don't know, a week or 2 weeks, maybe a month into it, we're driving and I'm smoking, cussing, crying. And I look over at my little sweet girl and she has tears coming down her face. And she says, Mommy, I do not think the potatoes are working. So, I think at that point, my insanity was affecting her way more than her dad's drinking. You know, and then at that point, it's like, just get to a meeting. There's no quick fix. When you're going through pain, the fastest way is through it. Just get to a meeting. I have to fast forward in the interest of time and let you know that we ended up getting a divorce. It was not what I wanted. I heard that some marriages just don't make it. And it was, I swear, it was let go or be dragged. There were claw marks all over that man. I did not want to let him go. And it was super duper painful. And I remember showing up at Al-Anon meetings once again feeling like a failure because I couldn't make it. I couldn't make it work. What did I do, not do, all that madness. And of course he was off flitting around. He decided to get sober and he's hanging out with these hotties in AA and having so much fun. And I just felt like I was shriveling up and dying inside. And somebody said to me, you know, I don't know, I know a lot of people are like into rebound relationships, whatever, but I was fried from loving this man. Anyways, a suggestion was made to me, why don't you go back to school? And you know, something turned on. You know when you hear the truth, somebody says something and you just know inside that's for you? I knew that was for me. And something lit up inside because I knew I was supposed to go to school. Not everybody's supposed to go to college. I was supposed to go to college. And I made a decision to go back to school and I ended up getting my degree, which I'm so proud of. And other people were, you know, in all this pain from rebound relationships. And I'm like, oh, I just got an A+ on my paper. You know, so it did so much for my self-worth. And for a girl like me who didn't know how to be alone, who didn't know how to, you know, hold on to God's hand and take the next right step and do the next indicated thing, that was marvelous. It was everything that I learned in service work, right? I learned how to keep a commitment here. I took it out into the real world. I got a degree. It made my life better. It made my daughter's life better. It was amazing. And my self-worth grew with that. It wasn't ego. It was self-worth. I know how to blow up the ego. That never did anything for me. But the self-worth thing, that stays. Anyway, so during that time period, I was district representative, which is kind of a big deal. And I was feeling like really special in Al-Anon, and I showed up at one of my daughter's soccer games, and there's her dad, and they bought him a t-shirt, Coach Jeb, and everybody thinks he's so great. And I remember that rage came back, and I hadn't had that rage in so long. You know, the steps had really done a number on me, and I don't walk around angry today. I will tell you that anger, there's a flip side to that, and it's called enthusiasm, and I have a lot of that. So every character defect gets flipped to an asset today. So don't be ashamed of what you bring to the table, because what God does with it, he will turn it into a masterpiece, and it's remarkable. But anyways, that anger came back that day. And I remember going to the car and bursting into tears because I cry when I'm angry. It's gorgeous. Anyway, so I call my sponsor and I'm just like, what is it about alcoholics? They can fool everybody. The whole soccer team thinks he's awesome. Ah! And I'm a district representative. Nobody cares. And my sponsor said, you know, because I'm saying, what is it about an alcoholic? They can fool everyone. And she goes, what is it about you that maybe wants to take the one thing away from that man that makes him feel good about himself? And I'm like, ugh. And then she said, how important is it that your daughter have a hero for a father? And I'm like, kind of important. If I would have had my dad, if my dad was my hero, my life would have been way different. It's kind of important. She's like, guess what? You have influence over that. You have power over that. That's something that you can help. And I'm like, ugh. Get out there and treat him with respect. Treat with him with dignity. Treat him like the hero your daughter needs him to be. You have all of us. You have all of Al-Anon who thinks you're great. Let him have the dang soccer team. And that was amazing advice. That was life-changing for me. And somewhere in those years, I stopped taking score. I released it. It was like, no longer do I get to be the judge and jury over what someone deserves, what I deserve. I release that. Surrender to win. Oh my gosh, I have 1 minute. Okay, so really quick. I was so nice to him. We began going to church together. And I was able to renew my faith because I separate God from the people that follow God. I don't like them, but I do. I have a higher power that is amazing. And he's my higher, it's like, how high is your higher power? Pretty high. Like, my higher power is pretty amazing. And big enough for all my complexities, all my problems, all my life stuff. So my daughter says, it's an answer to prayer, Mom. Dad wants to come to church. And I'm like, I was not praying that. Anyway, so we sit together. She sits in the middle. They release for children's church. She gets up. Now we're sitting together. So we're sleeping together. Then we're back together. Then we got married. Then we had another baby. Then he left again. So I got you caught up. I am now... I'm serious. I have 1 minute. I have married and divorced the same man twice. I have a 22-year-old daughter and I have an 8-year-old son. And most of the time my life looks unmanageable, but it's glorious. I have learned in Al-Anon that my daughter, my son, my husband are not my responsibility. their emotional well-being does not determine my emotional well-being. Their life is theirs to lead. My life is mine. We have influence. We do not have power. So today I lead by example. I was told by my sponsor that my most important Al-Anon commitments are named Carissa and Luke. And those two kids get the majority of my attention and energy, and that's where I take my program. I'm nothing if I can't take it home with me. So those kids benefit from what I learned from you, and they know that they are loved and cared for and protected, and that I will go to bat for them. And as a result, most nights I can sleep. Right now I'm going through a crazy phase because my daughter just dropped out of college, which isn't my favorite, but she's my favorite. And I get to let her know that I believe in her. I know she'll make the right decisions for her, and I will stand by her and support her to the best of my ability as a praying mother. But what it looks like in my home is I have an early bird son who gets up between 5 and 6 a.m., and I have a daughter who gets home around 2 a.m., and I'm not sleeping. And one of the things I've learned in Al-Anon is that I have to take care of myself in order for me to have a good life. I don't feel good. The people around me don't feel good. So I'm in the process of setting boundaries to take actions so that I can get the right amount of sleep, so that I can do my job, so I can be a good parent, blah, blah, blah. Basically, so that I could be the woman that God has called me to be. And that's really what my aim is. This is not the road that I would have walked. This is not the story that I want to tell. In fact, I like to say that if you are watching a movie, this is the part I'd get up and go get popcorn. Like, this isn't my favorite part of the movie of my life. However, I know the story ends very well. And I have a confidence and a hope because I've seen enough of you go through life with things that you didn't expect to happen, going sideways, whatnot, alcoholism creeps its ugly head or whatever again. And it's not about living problem free for me. Oh, I'm all rhyming now. But you know what I mean? It's not about that. It's about having the tools to face my life and enjoy my life no matter what. I feel like that's my commitment. I have a little bracelet that my friend gave me for Christmas, and it really means a lot to me because it just says masterpiece. And what I feel like is I'm God's masterpiece. So my job is to put my life on display, and input is welcome. I am open. I am willing. I'm to the best of my ability. I'm honest. I'm sure if you asked all my brothers and sisters, they would have a different version of how they grew up. This is my version. It's my truth. I'm doing the best I can with what I have, and I'm willing to do the next indicated thing to get where I'm supposed to go, to do what I'm supposed to do. But right now, I get to be present. I get to be with you. I get to enjoy the fascinating and interesting people that are in my life. And when things crop up and daughters drop out of college, I get to say, oh, I can't wait to see what God's going to do next. And I honestly feel like that. Anyways, thank you for all that you've given me. I really owe my life to you.